Welcome to the View My Seats podcast with John Lord, a series of conversations on sports and culture with various fans, friends, and media personalities. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or by visiting viewmyseats.com. Thanks for listening. Greg Wyshynski, editor of the Puck Daddy blog on Yahoo Sports. Thanks for joining me.
My pleasure.
All right, so let's get started here. What do you think happens first? We have a Canadian team winning the Stanley Cup or a horse finally winning the Triple Crown?
I think based on the numbers game and all everything else, I'm pretty sure that Canada will probably win a cup before we get a Triple Crown winner. But, they're both Haley's Comet at this point, waiting decades for these things to happen. But it'll happen eventually for Canada, especially now that, Hockey Jesus is going to be in Edmonton, so.
Yeah, that's right, with the top draft pick. But my question is, you're going to have to explain to fans why it hasn't happened, because for most fans, it seems as if, Canada remains the epicenter of hockey in this world, and it just hasn't happened for a professional hockey team in Canada for almost 23 years.
There's a lot of reasons. I mean, some of it is definitely mismanagement of some of these franchises. Some of it has to do with the difficulty and the pressure of playing in these markets. I mean, you think about all the players that are born in the Toronto area that have not chosen to come and play for the Leafs, despite there being money. I mean, some of that is obviously tied to the team being competitive or not competitive. But a lot of that's tied to the idea that these markets have such intense pressure on them, and the scrutiny on these guys is so intense that they'd rather go toil in Tampa Bay or Dallas or other areas that are, one or two newspaper towns, don't have a cadre of television cameras in your face at all times. It's a different vibe. So I think it's a combination of some teams not really being managed well and some teams not necessarily having the same pool to pick from when it comes to, say, free agents.
So for fans of college basketball, it would be saying, why don't more high school basketball players from New York choose to go to St. John's? It's a similar thing with hockey and pros choosing not to go to Toronto and other large markets in Canada because of the pressure of playing at home?
It would be more like, why didn't this kid from Raleigh go to North Carolina? It's kind of like, there's not only the intense pressure of the media, but it's also knowing what the expectations are and what you're living up to. I mean, in the case of, the Leafs, for example, and we've heard a lot about this in the Mike Babcock saga, it's not just simply going there and playing hockey and dealing with the media. It's also feeling the crushing expectation of trying to end a drought that extends all the way to the 1960s. So it's that whole aspect of it, too. And if you're playing in Montreal, obviously, it's the opposite, which is that you're playing for the Yankees, and the expectation is that you're going to, help them win a championship in short order because that's just what they allegedly do.
As far-fetched as it sounds, let's just say the Leafs make it to the Cup Finals next year. Is it the type of scenario where all of Canada, regardless of your affiliation, would be pulling for the Toronto Maple Leafs to win a Stanley Cup?
Not necessarily. I really think it depends on the makeup of the team, and how they get there. It's one of those deals where there would be a lot of fans who love the Leafs that want to see them break the curse. And there's going to be a lot of fans of teams that hate the Leafs, the Senators and the Canadiens, who obviously would never want to see the team win another cup. And you're going to have this large cross-section of Canadians that are going to have to decide whether or not it's time to take our collective foot off their neck, or if this team is such a deplorable team that they don't deserve to be the one that breaks the curse. That's really going to be the issue. I think it's like the Capitals this year, right? Like, you can feel the tide turning with national sentiment when it comes to the Caps, where there was a large portion of people that were like, they've been in hockey jail for too long.
Yeah.
Let's hope that they can advance and maybe, eventually breaks through, gets a ring, so we can finally stop talking about all this can't win the big game stuff, but then they didn't win the big game.
Yeah, as a casual hockey fan, I'm confused by why there's been so much, I guess, I don't know if animosity is fair, but why so many people question a supreme talent like Alex Ovechkin, because when I watch that guy play, it just seems like he's going 100% every time he's on the ice, and he seems like such a dynamic hockey player and scorer that there would be more people pulling for him. But it seems in the past that he's faced more criticism than he has praise when it comes to his performance in the playoffs. But you think, even though that they lost to the Rangers a couple nights ago, that favor was on the Capitals' side, and you actually wrote about how the Capitals should kind of hold their heads high even in losing to the Rangers?
Yeah, that was definitely the vibe I got after that game, and I found that to be interesting because I had covered a lot of Capitals elimination games where afterwards it was like, okay, who's getting traded, who's getting dropped, who's getting fired. It was much more apocalyptic. And last week, you know, the other night after Game 7, it was definitely much more, okay, well, we know the coach is coming back, we know most of the core is coming back. This was a valuable learning experience for us, and we'll use it for the next run, which is just simply not the vibe you ever got from the Capitals.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of positivity. I think Ovechkin quieted a lot of critics with his play in the postseason and his play during the regular season, in which he, you know, was effective on both ends of the ice. And then on top of that, obviously, actually scoring a goal for the first Game 7 since 2009 also, you know, goes a long way too. So yeah, it was a very solid, strong, and convincing playoff performance from Ovechkin, and I think a lot of people have you know, taken a second look at what we've all been saying about him for the last couple of years.
All right, let's switch gears to talk about the teams that do remain in the conference finals here starting this weekend. Of the four teams, Anaheim, Chicago, Tampa Bay, and New York, who has the best home ice advantage?
Wow. I'd say Chicago, maybe? I don't know. The Rangers have an advantage in the Garden, too. I think when that crowd really gets rocking and rolling, that's a very tough place to play. And Lundqvist, obviously, is extraordinarily comfortable at the Garden and plays really well there. Chicago is just a very, very tough place to play. You know, but home ice is what it is. I mean, it's one of these things that's sort of tenuous in the Stanley Cup playoffs where, you know, a win by the road team in game one or two all of a sudden sends the entire series on its ear with regard to home ice advantage. So, you know, there are teams that thrive better there, but I think all four of these teams that are left are also teams that have shown pretty adept at winning big games on the road.
And so it doesn't necessarily matter. I'm not to say that home ice doesn't matter, but these four teams are here for a reason, and they're so good that you could foresee all these teams stealing games on the road. It doesn't necessarily, home ice doesn't necessarily matter for any of these four teams because of the high quality, right?
Yeah, that's correct. And also because, you know, you think about what Tampa's done in the first couple rounds here, winning huge games at Bell Center, which is, you know, one of the toughest places to play in all of the sports. And, you know, the Rangers, sparking their comeback down in D.C. in Game 6. So it's like they've all proven that they can do these things. Anaheim winning, I mean, sweeping Winnipeg, and everybody thought Winnipeg might have a fighting chance in that series simply because of the volume of their home fans. They've all had impressive moments on the road to the playoffs, and ultimately home ice is like I said, it's not usually the biggest determining factor when it comes to these series until you get down to Game 7, which is really... really where it can make a difference.
Would you care to rank the four remaining goaltenders?
Lundqvist one. I mean, that's an easy one. That's not one I have to think about too much. Crawford and Bishop, I think, are right there, 2-3, with the caveat that they're both playing really well right now. Both can be inconsistent and be a detriment to their team, but I give the nod to Crawford only because I think Bishop overall has been more inconsistent in the playoffs, and then Freddie Anderson before us.
You're going to have to explain to us how a guy like Crawford for the Blackhawks, you rank second, but wasn't it just, was it last series or two series ago, where he was pulled for a few games for a rookie, right?
He was for Scott Darling, who is one of the best stories of the season, the journeyman guy who came up took over for Crawford when he was injured in the regular season, and took over for him again in the playoffs, and he's been effective. The answer is goalies are super streaky, and you know, even though he struggled in the first round against Nashville, he came back, he played really well in their elimination game, and then he was just unbeatable in the following round, you know, for Chicago, so against Minnesota.
Okay, if you take
Chris Crawford's also won a cup too, which is, you know, say what you will about that. I mean, he's still a guy that has done it before, and Bishop is making his first appearance in the conference final.
Right, but let's just say you take the goaltenders out of it. What will these series come down to? I know that it all does depend on how well the goaltender's playing, but if you were just to remove the goaltenders from the equation, which sounds impossible, we'll just take them out of the equation for now. What does each series come down to? In other words, these are the things you need to look for in order to really see which way the series is trending.
Well, the Western Conference, I think it's going to be Chicago's defense at forward, versus Anaheim's offense. I mean, the thing about the Ducks that's pretty remarkable is the way that they've absolutely rolled the first two opponents they played with Winnipeg and Calgary to the point where Corey Perry is, I think, at a 2 points per game rate right now, which is insane. But they've not gone up against Jonathan Toews and Marian Hossa or on the back line with Duncan Keith and players like that. So I hesitate to put Anaheim over in the series, but because I think Chicago's defensive depth and the fact that they can match line for line strength for strength of Anaheim is going to be a huge factor in the series. Over in the East, you know, the it's going to be whether or not the Rangers can continue to win one goal games. I mean, the key to beating the Lightning is not allowing the Stamkos line and the quote unquote triplets line with Kucherov and Johnson and Vlad to run roughshod over you offensively. The Rangers controlled a very good offensive team and the Capitals, and they shut down the Penguins, and now they face another really good offensive team. Can they keep winning these close games? I mean, you know, Lundqvist is probably looking around for John Tortorella on that bench because it seems like he's not getting any goal support. It's going to have to win every game 2-1 or 1-0. And that's, you know, if you can sustain that for two rounds, I don't know if you can do it.
You're going to have to explain to us, Steven Stamkos is clearly Tampa Bay's best player. Is there a comp you would make to him, either a historical comp or another current player who some of us might be more familiar with in the league today as far as who Stamkos reminds you of?
Well, he's a prototypical sniper. I mean, I don't know if there's a direct correlation to the kind of player that he is, but I mean, he is of that Ovechkin, Brett Hull kind of ilk of a player who is able to get his shot off in a variety of ways and can be extraordinarily effective in doing so. Not the strongest defensive player, but a guy who can absolutely fly and a guy who's dangerous on every shift. And, you know, the first round was tough for him because he was playing against the Red Wings, and Mike Babcock has a pretty decent ability of being able to figure out how to shut down the other team's best players. And that's kind of what I think hurt Stamkos in round one. But he really found his swagger and found his vibe in the second round, and he's been extraordinarily dangerous for them.
I watched most of Game 7 between the Rangers and the Capitals, and you know, I was scratching my head like most hockey fans do when they watch the Rangers play at how come the Rangers can't score more goals in the playoffs? Because they seem like they have a tremendous amount of talent and talented offensive players. And, you know, up here in New York, it's all about how Rick Nash has to be better, how Rick Nash has to score more goals. But just in general, is this just a strange playoff thing? I mean, I know it's Alain Vigneault and his system's different from Tortorella, but it does seem eerily familiar to the bygone days of Coach Tortorella, where very few goals are scored for a very talented offensive team.
Yeah, for sure, and I think that, you know, Nash is a guy that a lot of people think gets too much grief for not producing, but, you know, he doesn't produce. And when you go from being a 40-some-odd goal scorer in the regular season to having, like, I think it might be only about 3 or 4 in the postseason so far, and going long stretches without scoring goals, it's due criticism, you know, especially when you look at his shooting percentage and how dramatically different it is in the postseason versus the regular season. As a team, I mean, they're a team that can beat you a number of ways. I've seen them play strong offensive games, but, you know, Alain Vigneault understands what's on this roster, and I think at the end of the day, the Rangers feel like the best way to go about trying to win in the postseason is to try to, you know, batten down the hatches, shut it all down, play strong defensive hockey as best they can, and sometimes it's going to adversely affect your offense.
Okay. Okay, besides his disarming good looks, what makes Henrik Lundqvist so good in the playoffs?
It's mental toughness. I mean, I know that's kind of a cliche for goalies, but, I mean, you look at his record in elimination games, and it's absurd. If the NHL was of the bigger entity for American sports editors and on ESPN, he would be mentioned amongst the greatest clutch players in the history of the sport.
Yeah.
Insofar as his ability to win elimination games and his record in Game 7, I think he's now like 10 for 10 in his last 10 elimination games at Madison Square Garden, for example. And his numbers are off the chart. He's staring into the abyss and doesn't blink when it comes to these elimination games. And so I think it's just this ridiculous mental toughness that he has. And it's been honed over the years, as you said, from years and years and years of knowing that he's the last line of defense for teams that can't score. And while that sometimes can crush the spirit of players like Carey Price, for example, as we saw in the previous round of the playoffs, where at some point it catches up to you that, you know, you can't win every game 1-0, Lundqvist has always been a guy who has been able to shoulder that load. And, you know, the last two seasons, obviously, have been really successful to the Rangers because they've gotten just a little bit more offense. But this season's been a bit more on Lundqvist, I think, in the postseason, because they just haven't, their goal scoring dropped from last year's levels.
Well, he's already one of the best Rangers of all time, Lundqvist. And if New York wins the Cup this year, is it fair to say that he becomes the best New York Ranger of all time?
Wow. It's possible. I mean, you'll get arguments of Brian Leetch being maybe the best of all time as far as homegrown players. But, you know, if he wins the Cup, it's going to validate him in the same way that it validated Brodeur and so did Waugh. I think it's the hole in his game, but ultimately, goaltenders are always going to get sort of an eternal pass that skaters don't get for some reason, which is that there's so many other factors that are inherent in a goalie's success that they seem to get a break when it comes to counting the number of rings games versus a skater, where if you don't win a cup as a skater, it's the difference between being, you know, Rocket Richard and Mike Gardner. You know, it's just sort of like, you know, One guy is the guy with all the championships. The other guy is statistically amazing, but not in the same pantheon of greatness as other players that have their names come up.
How have the Chicago Blackhawks been able to sustain success for so long?
They've been able to fit everybody under the cap, although there's a thought that's going to end after the season, because they're going to have to make a top calling guy like Patrick Sharp. But, you know, the core of that team has been the same through the Cup years. Taves, Kane, Keith, Seabrook, Sharp. They added Marian Hossa. He wins for them. He sticks around, and he's still an extraordinarily effective player. They've been able to keep that core together and then augment them with a good supporting cast. After they won their first Cup, there was that mass exodus of players to all parts of the NHL, mostly to Atlanta when they were still there. But they've finally been able to figure out how to, you know, add the supporting cast back for through young players like Brandon Saad, through Andrew Shaw. They grew a good group of young players that are relatively cheap and play important roles in that team. And the basis of everything goes back to the coach, Joel Quenneville, and the system he plays and the bedrock of defense that they have, not only with their top four guys on the blue line, but also with having Hossa, who's arguably the best defensive winger in the game, and Taves, who you could argue is the best defensive center in the game.
So to try to bring this to basketball, in NBA terms, would they be the San Antonio Spurs?
Yeah, I think you could say that. I mean, you could definitely say that. I mean, and not only because I think Dave and Duncan have pretty much the same personality, they are like that. They can play with an edge a little bit. Great coaching. There is an efficiency in their game that I think is reminiscent of the Spurs, and also just this notion almost that you can you know, write in permanent marker their name deep into the playoffs each season. So I think there is a correlation with that.
I also feel that with both the Spurs and the Hawks, and maybe this isn't as true in hockey as it is basketball, but it feels to me like, you know, sometimes the regular season in both sports is I don't want to say overrated, but it's all about getting into the playoffs. And then it's about playing your best when you get into the playoffs. And for years, that's what the Spurs were able to do. Is that similar to what the Hawks do? It's just about getting into the playoffs. I mean, I know they finished, fourth in the Western Conference this year, but they didn't necessarily play their best hockey. But when they made it to the playoffs, everyone looked at them, even as a four seed, and said, yeah, with the talent and experience they have, the Hawks are one of the favorites. And so it feels kind of NBA-ish as far as it's all about just getting into the postseason.
Well, it's funny. I think it all depends on what your team is and how they've thrived. Team like Chicago, a veteran team like that, they're pretty convinced they can win anywhere, right? So getting home ice would be great because you always want Game 7 in your home barn. But ultimately, you know that maybe as a veteran team, not expending as much energy as another team in the regular season is beneficial. And there's something to be said about that. You look like at a team like the St. Louis Blues, for example, who myself and a lot of people thought were going to make a really deep playoff run this year, and they looked like they were out of gas. And that's partially because their coach, Ken Hitchcock, asks for so much of them in the regular season. There is a danger to assuming that you can just win anywhere or turn it on at any time, which is that you could end up like the LA Kings this year, a team that, you know, ever since they won the cup out of the number 8 seed in the Western Conference, has completely believed that the regular season is a joke and they could just start playing strong hockey in March, make the playoffs, everybody, and there was something to be said for that when they won the cup last season, but they tried the trick again this year, and they wound up on the outside of the playoffs looking in.
Yeah, and that's the risk you run when you wait to turn on the Jets and then the Jets don't fire in time to make the playoffs, then you don't have a chance to play you don't have the chance to play your best in the postseason. Okay, Greg, so I'm going to ask you now to make predictions here. Who wins in the West? Who wins in the East?
Well, it's funny. I did some video for Yahoo yesterday, and they asked me for predictions, and I realized I didn't actually like sit down to make any, so I had to make them on the fly. So
how about this? Talk me through your decision making process.
Oh no, I've already made.
Oh, okay.
They're set in stone. Like,
okay.
I had to put something down on video yesterday, so this is what we're going with. Okay. The caveat that I didn't really research it too much, and also the caveat that I also picked the Blues to win the cup.
Okay.
So I'm picking the Lightning in 7. I like the idea of them bucking every trend possible and beating the Rangers in a game 7 on the road. I do like their offense. I do love their coaching. And I love the storylines in this series in which you have the Lightning trying to beat Marty St. Louis and the Rangers, the guy who basically said, I'm done with this team. I want to go play in New York. There's a lot of guys on the Lightning, too, that are also guys that need to be on the Rangers.
Oh, right.
And, like Boyle and Stallman, who had paid for the Rangers, say, you don't have a place there anymore, and we're not going to pay you the money. So that's good motivation, too, but I like the Lightning in that series. And over in the West, I'm picking the Blackhawks 6. I love Anaheim, and I love Bruce Boudreau, and I would like nothing more than to see them win this series. But these are old pros, man, and I get the feeling that they're going to be able to find ways to shut down the top line. And although the Ducks' depth is very impressive, I just like Chicago's maybe a little bit more. And they've got some real heroes in that team too that played extraordinarily well in the postseason. And with Patrick Kane back and healthy, they've been dynamic. It's they're still top to bottom the best team in hockey, I think, when you look at it, and I think they'll probably win that series in 6.
Who is NBC rooting for?
NBC's rooting for the Rangers and Blackhawks. I mean,
yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, maybe the Rangers in Anaheim, because, you know, hockey is pretty hot in California, and especially in the LA area. You probably have a lot of Kings fans tuning in to see if the Ducks can lose that series. But I mean, New York, Chicago is the series that they would love to see, and it would be a real blockbuster. I mean, you know, the ratings here in New York are very strong for the Rangers. The ratings in Chicago are always very strong for the Blackhawks, and that would be an enormously popular series for them, which probably means it won't happen.
Yeah, right. Two more quick ones for you. It's almost summertime here, and I have to ask of the four remaining cities, which is your favorite city to enjoy a nice outdoor adult beverage in?
Well, that's interesting because, I mean, as the playoffs get deep, for the writers in the press box start talking about where we'd like to go, where we would like to spend a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
In the Cup final, and, yeah. And I think sometimes that can inform some of my colleagues' picks. Series, but not me.
Not you. No, you're different.
Oh yeah, I'm unimpeachable. Of the four that are left, I mean, Chicago is my favorite party town. With the caveat that I live in New York, so that's kind of off the table. Chicago is a great town. Amazing food. The bars are open way well past 4 a.m. Just a great place, and a place where in the other cup runs I've had a really fun time hanging out there and drinking beer and you know, look, the bottom line about Chicago is that it has things you can't get anywhere else. I mean, there are like Chicago style pizza places, but there's not a Lou Malnati's in New York. You know, there are hot dog places that do Chicago style hot dogs, but they're so much better in Chicago. So like it's all those things that city offers up for a guy who loves his food and loves his drink. So it does make you kind of quietly root for Chicago to win that series.
All right. Well, that's two votes for Chicago as the city I would if I were writing about the games would most like to visit. But you have to tell us the must visit spot or drink when you go to Chicago.
Wow, that's a good question, because I mostly just kind of stagger around to where the writers are. I don't necessarily have one place that I can say has been my favorite beer bar or anything of that nature. I, you know, I just kind of hang out in the Park District and go from bar to bar and see what's open and see if the vibe is. I'm much more of a foodie restaurant-y guy out there than I am a bar guy. You know, Blue Malnati's, the aforementioned, the Grill and the Goat, which is Stephanie from Top Chef's place, is one of the best places I've ever eaten. There's a lot of really good chow in Chicago that goes beyond the standard deep dish hot dog, hot beef sandwich Trinity that they have there.
Well, if I were you and I were, and let's just say Chicago did make it to the Stanley Cup Finals and I were covering the games, I would almost be compelled to take my car from the New York City metro area out to Chicago just so I could load up the back seat with the beers from Wisconsin and Michigan and Illinois that we can't that we can't get here in the Northeast. That would be one of my driving factors.
I once took a road trip to St. Louis before New Belgium shipped east of the Mississippi, because for a while you couldn't get New Belgium here on the East Coast. And so I drove down to St. Louis with a girl I was seeing, and we stayed there. We saw all the extraordinarily kitschy St. Louis things you can see, like the International Bowling Museum. We went to see the Bigfoot Monster Truck Museum. We went to the Budweiser Brewery. And saw the Clyde sales, and then loaded up the car with just boxes and cases of New Belgium beer, you know, Fat Tire and their seasonal brews and everything else, because we couldn't get it on the East Coast. So I understand the road trip, the beer road trip, in a very personal way. So I may have to take your advice. Plus, Yahoo would obviously, you know, cover, you know, gas and mileage.
Oh,
so from a personal. From a personal standpoint, I mean, it would be very nefarious thing to do.
Yeah, obviously.
Subsidize my trip that way.
Yeah, well, you could turn in all the cans and bottles so they could get the 5 cent deposit back.
Yeah, I mean, actually, as we're talking, I'm you know, on the side of the road here in the city. I have a car and have to move it twice a week for the street sweepers. And I just saw the classic New York thing of the homeless guy carrying. I don't even know where you get bags this big. But what looked like two parachutes worth of cans and bottles that he's taken out of recycling bins to turn around and make some dough with. So, yeah, I mean, obviously the bottle deposits would be a windfall for me as well.
Well, I think Seinfeld proved that wouldn't work.
Right. Yes, that's true. That was an amazing episode. Newman's grand plan backfiring.
All right, well, Greg Wyshynski, let me get you out here with just one final non-related hockey question. Thanks so much for your time. I started the conversation by asking about horse racing, so I don't know if you follow the sport at all, but I'm asking everybody I talked to this week to give me their favorite at the Preakness. So if you do follow horse racing, who do you have?
I do, but I admittedly haven't really looked at the field. I've been so busy with with all the stuff this week that I haven't really gotten a chance to look at the field. I was planning on doing it today and maybe trying to head to an OTB to lay something on it. But, I mean, the performance of American Pharoah in the Derby was super impressive, really, really impressive in a toying with them kind of way. So I'm interested to see what the rest of that field looks like. Vis-a-vis the chance to maybe have the Belmont meet something again this year.
Yeah, I think that's what a lot of people are hoping for. Anyway, Greg Wyshynski, thanks for giving us your insight into the NHL playoffs, and I appreciate the time.
Thanks, Jeff.